Major T. Thomas, Major T. Thomas, Imperial War Museum, accession number 11575, 11575, Reel 1.
Major Thomas, Reel 1, could we start by your telling me how you came to be in the Army first and when it was?
Well, I joined the Army in 1937, and it was with the Durham Light Infantry. We went out to France in 1939. I came back again before the actual push. Came back to England and served in a training centre at Bransforth Castle in County Durham with the DLI. In 1941, I then... In 1942, I with three commando and we did Dieppe, a short journey over the Channel. A 24-hour action. We came back from there. In 1943, I went to Ringway for some conversion parachuting exercises. We jumped out of Whitley bombers in the early days, and then we had to convert to Dakotas, C-47s. And it was in that year we were preparing, and we were prepared for something like 8 different actions. But the armies of Europe were moving so fast that we were not really needed. We were briefed, debriefed, stood down on 8 occasions until we got to Arnhem. But by that time, we were getting a little sick and didn't believe it would happen. But on the 18th of September, we in 4 Brigade, which was 156 Battalion, 10th and 11th Battalions, dropped on the second day on the Gingelheide Heath, just north of Wolfies. We had a bad time because we dropped into a lot of ground troops. The DZ was almost surrounded. We lost a lot of our dead on the DZ itself. In fact, I was C Company then, and Pierre Major Powell was my company commander, and I was a colour sergeant by that time. We got badly shot up and we lost a lot of men on the DZ. We parted and headed for the bridge. We found we couldn't get to the bridge because of German... I'll just think of their name. Anyhow. And there were SS troops resting. They prevented us from getting down to the bridge and shot us up badly. By that time, we'd lost 2 platoons. Incidentally, the 156 Battalion lost more men dead than any other battalion at Arnhem. The next bet was to try and get into Wolfies and so on to the Hartenstein at Oosterbeek. We couldn't get there. We couldn't get into Oosterbeek. But finally, following a railway tunnel and going down, we made a dash, headlong dash, led by Brigadier Sean Hackett, into Oosterbeek itself. And that started the main battle, because by that time we were not really organised. By the time we got into the... We held the Northern Circuit. The Southern Circuit was held by Dickie Lonsdale and 11th Battalion, or the remnants of 11th Battalion, into Church, the old church at Oosterbeek, and the rest of the troops completely made a perimeter around the Hartenstein Hotel. But steadily, more armour was coming in, and they were really knocking us out, and we were getting in a smaller and smaller circle. until we got down to the old church, where now by that time Dickie Lunsell had gone, his force had almost been captured, and we then had a large party of glider pilots with us at that time, and they were fighting as infantry soldiers, and there were sergeants and warrant officers. By the time we got down to the old church, we were then 100 yards from the river, the Rhine. We were still continuing to fight, but we had very little to fight with. We lost all our supplies because they'd all been dropped in the original Mark DZs. And of course they were far behind us, and we couldn't get out to them. So there was one alternative, that we had to either give ourselves up or try and get to the river. And then we had the order, the final order from headquarters, from across the way, to General Urquhart, who was our commander, who'd been lost for 4 days. So he had 6 days of fighting. But anyhow, he got the order. We had very little wireless, because a mistake had been made on the crystals on the wireless sets, so they were practically useless. The only direction we had was from guns firing star shells from the other side to give us a direction to go on. On the final night, the glider pilots, acting as guides, led all these different parties, about 400 men, down to the river. A star shell stream was coming across, indicating a crossing point, and the REs were coming from the other side in assault boats to pick us up. But they were badly shot up because the Germans knew what the bloody star shells were for, you see. So they just bombarded both points, both banks. We moved a bit further down the river. We got into a river up to our necks and walked down the river for about half a mile. I was able to get across with two other chaps. I left the wounded on the bank, and we got two Canadian craft. And thank goodness there was an operator in one of them. So we tied them both together, brought them back, loaded our wounded in, and that's how 28 men and one officer got out of Arnhem. We then went down to Deeth, and then on to Nijmegen, where we flew home back to Milton Mowbray. In the end, we had 47 returned. Shan Hackett being badly shot up, John Waddy, a company commander of B Company, very badly wounded. Major Pott, MC, very badly wounded. Major Page, killed. CO, killed. Colonel DeVoe. So, 29 got out across the river, and when we got back to Melton, by various means, people coming through escape routes, through the underground, and getting back to Nijmegen, they flew them back, and we finished up with 47 people out of 820 of that battalion.
Had you gone into the operation with high expectations?
Say again?
Had you gone into the operation with high expectations?
Oh, yes. All of us were ready for it and expected to do the job as Monty wanted us to do. In fact, shorten the war by 6 months. It could have happened, but it was not known, the troops on the ground. It was the intelligence was wrong. The Dutch intelligence was wrong. But then these troops hadn't been there long. They were just resting on the way back to Germany.
This was the Panzer Division.
That's right, the Panzer Division. And we dropped right in the bloody middle of them, you see. And we were surrounded before. Well, they were shooting us out of the sky in parachutes. We were losing men on parachutes. They just turned everything into the air as soon as they saw the drop.
So you think it really was a question of bad luck?
I think so. It could have worked. If we'd have got to that bridge, or two units had got to that bridge, it could have worked. But as it was, John Frost, Colonel John Frost then, with his remnants of two para, And when I say remnants, I'm talking about 140 men. He held that bridge for 5 days before being knocked out. And he was literally blown off it. And they had everything, and we had nothing. And then, of course, well, John Frost was telling his story in church yesterday. It was our annual church thing yesterday, you see, for the Arnhem battle. And John Frost was telling the story to the people in the church. And he put all his wounded into a house at the corner of the bridge, 200 of them, badly wounded, not walking wounded. And, of course, they set fire to the house, the Germans, not knowing it was a hospital. And in fact, a troop of Germans came in and cleared all the wounded out and took them away. They didn't have to do it, but they did. And we were terribly grateful for that. By this time, don't forget, when John Frost is in the bridge, we're in the Oosterbeek perimeter, you see, and never the twain would meet. You couldn't get either way. We're all cut off. And everybody with John Frost, of course, went into the bag as prisoner of war. And we were the lucky ones. But we had to leave all our wounded, of course, or the majority of them, in the Hartenstein Hotel, which, of course, is now a museum. And it was our headquarters at the time.
What did you think of the way the Germans fought at Arnhem?
They fought very well. But with superior firepower, you see. When you can bring a Tiger up and just belt 4 rounds into a house, you just retreat to the next one. And that's how they tighten that perimeter.
Did you see anything at all of Dutch civilians?
Oh, yes, lots of them. They were very helpful to us. Except the mad ones, the one there was an asylum there, and they'd all got out and were running around in the woods, crazy like, in their white coats and things. And they got in the way. The Poles dropped a bit late in the wrong place, and because they couldn't speak English, the majority of them, our chaps thought they were bloody Germans, you see. And there's a lot of interfire there. But then now half of the Poles dropped on the southern side of the river and couldn't even get across. It was only with hindsight, a year later, we found there was a ferry bridge across the Rhine that we could have used. Yes. But that's about it, I think, of that particular battle.
Now, later on, you served in Palestine, you said.
Yes.
Was that during the period when the mandate came to an end?
Yes, when we were fighting the terrorists then, don't forget. And it was when the King David Hotel went up. I can't remember the date, frankly.
Which unit were you serving with then?
Tupper. I was then a sergeant major.
What do you remember about relations between the Jews and the Arabs in those days?
Terrible. Absolutely terrible. It was a hate session from start to finish. And we're still getting it.
What manifestations of it did you see as you went about in Palestine?
Well, we were fighting both of them in many ways. It was intensive, the feeling between them. And I'm afraid my sympathies were with the Arabs at the time, because they should never have been in it. We give them the country, or at least Allenbury did it to you. And he put them in there, and the Israelis have just sort of annexed areas, and still doing so in the left bank. So I think they've asked for what they've got. And now we're going to fill them with Russians, aren't we? 100,000 or 1 million Jews from Russia going into the left bank.
What kind of duties did Tupara undertake? When
security duties. Cover, security, terrorists, patrols, that sort of thing.
And which company were you in?
C Company.
Whereabouts in Palestine was C Company?
Ramat David. My memory's hazy on these things, Conrad, so please, you know, I don't remember detail as I should do.
You weren't anywhere near the King David Hotel when it was blown?
Yes, we're around it. They got through a security circle to put the bomb in, a car bomb.
Were you part of that security circle?
No, we were joining it.
What do you remember about the blowing up of the hotel?
Oh, the hell of a mess. It really is. The front part of the hotel disappeared. And I can't remember the casualties, but there were many.
Did you go in to help clear?
Oh, yes. We went in. When we cleared for bombs, it was a second bomb.
Were there any other incidents that you were involved in whilst you were there?
No, they were all petty ones, you know, simple security duties. There was a certain amount of shooting here and there, but there weren't any big casualties, and, No.
Did you ever make friends with any of the Arabs or Jews?
No.
Was that because of orders?
You know, it was our position in that area. And I have little time for the Jews. I've worked with the Arabs because in the Legion, in the Arab Legion, from Egypt, I went across to start or help start a parachute battalion with Ghulam Pasha in Oman. But then he was ruling the country through the army, you see. Hussein was on the throne. His father had died, was assassinated, in fact. And I had made good friends with the Arabs there because they were Bedouins. They were real Arabs from them. And when you made friends with a Bedouin, he remained friend for life. And in fact, I was blood brothers to three of them. You know, they tie your arm and cut you a little bit. And I still get letters from them. Yeah. And cards, you know, the odd card. But those, we got on very well. But anyhow, Ghulam Pasha then got the sack. And the Egyptians came in to run the Arab Legion then. Don't forget, you had two forces in there. You had the Frontier Force and you had the Arab Legion. But the Frontier Force was Brit officered. The Legion was to a degree, but when Ghulam Pasha went, the Egyptians put their officers in and the Legion standard dropped alarmingly. And we all had British Guards NCOs in their depot in Amman. And for every soldier, there was 200 applicants needed. Every vacancy, there would be 200 applicants. And it was a great force. But when it was officered by the Egyptian force, it went down badly. Because they're probably the poorest soldiers in the world, the Egyptians. So what they're going to do in the Gulf Desert, I don't know.
Did you get to know Sir John Glob?
I met him. No, I didn't get to know him. His son was out with him. His son was born there, Abu Ferris. And then he became Abu Ferris, father of Ferris. They're called Ghulam Pasha Abu Ferris, just before he was shortlisted.
What impression did you get of the Arab Legion as a force when you first got there?
Oh, it was very good. We dropped in the desert 20 miles from Amman, and it took us all our time to march in to Amman. But the pipe band that came out to marches in, had marched out 20 miles and marches in 20 miles, same day. Marvellous people, they were.
Can you tell me what part you played in the Suez Crisis of 56?
Well, we were in Cyprus then, and I was then with one para. By that time, I was an MTO, a motor transport officer. 3 para dropped on Gamel. I went in drop, but didn't do the journey. I stayed to do the supplies and logistics and came back to Cyprus, having got their petrol, weapons and ammunition into the El Gamel area. And then they were fighting then Egyptians in that area. And in fact, your canal is 90 miles long. On the first 3 days, they had 85 miles of it. And it was then when we had to come out, of course, when Eden, or the Americans, stepped in and stopped the thing and pulled him up. So we were left, and we went back to Cyprus because we were backed then by the French Foreign Legion, who had come to Nicosia in Cyprus. But earlier on than that, you see, we were in Cyprus again, and we dropped on Egypt when King Farouk went out, and General Naguib took over. He didn't want us there, in many ways told us to get out. We cleaned up the area. We went out to the Pink Palace, which is just south of Cairo, through the desert, absolutely filthy. And the troops, you had to see them to believe them. They had 3 or 4 rifles, each with 5 rounds each in their pocket, polished so fine every day that the brass was so thin. As soon as they put them in the rifles, they exploded in the breach. So much for the Egyptian army. But don't forget, the Egyptian commanders were paid to keep their soldiers. They didn't have like an MOD, a war office. So all the fiddles were done by the company commanders and commanders. And they would go into Cairo, leave the soldiers in the desert, and go into Cairo and stay in a hotel, feed well, and next morning come out and join their soldiers again. And I don't think they've changed.
What did you have to do when you cleaned up the area?
Well, we were faced with what was then the Egyptian army across that piece of desert. And 3 battalions were going to just blow our way through that Egyptian army to Cairo. It didn't come off because we were pulled out. There was a reason, Conrad, I wouldn't know. But it is, you know, we're sitting out in the middle of a bloody desert. And because we'd cleaned it up, it was like a sore thumb to their aircraft as well, you see.
Was this in 1952?
Yeah. 52-53. Yes, we came out from here. We went on the Warrior aircraft carrier, Warrior and Eagle, the 2 warcraft aircraft carriers that took us out to Cyprus. Then I realised that Cyprus had a railway. It isn't there now. But that's later on, of course, you know.
Going back to the earlier part of your career in the army, you said you joined the DLI. What did you think of that battalion?
Oh, it was very good. It was my first regiment, you see.
Which battalion did you belong to?
2nd.
And which company?
A Company. And we were in... Wait a minute. We were in Woking, in Inkham and Barracks then, a woman's prison, just before the war. It was then later to be the RMP's headquarters. What, I don't think it's there now, is it?
Not as far as I know.
The barracks. I think it's gone, yeah. In St. John's. Right, so then we came up to Bransworth, And we lived in the villages, in the church halls, and did our training in the streets with civilians, hadn't got uniforms, with broom chunks and all sorts of things, you know.
When was this?
1939.
Was this in Northern Ireland, did you say?
No.
Bransperth?
It's north of England. Durham. Bransperth Castle. Still there. Where we built a camp. A hutted camp in the fields opposite. And we did all our training there. After we moved out of the villages, the mining villages.
Were there many miners in a company of the 2nd Battalion of the DLI?
Was there what?
Many miners in that.
They were all miners. The majority of them were miners. Very good soldiers. Not the brightest in the world, but they were very good, very brave. Well, we had one, Wakenshaw. VC Wakenshaw. No, we haven't got him yet. This is our VC room, by the way. I'm going to fill all these with VCs. And Wakenshaw in the desert was simply told by a sergeant to keep firing his six-pounder. He did. He lost a leg, an arm, half of his head before he died. He was our first VC in the Second World War for the DLI.
You went with the 2nd Battalion of the DLI to, with the BEF?
Yes.
In France?
But I didn't stay there. I came out for another reason. It was a personal reason I came out for, and I was sent back for training.
So you weren't in France when the Germans attacked on the 10th of May?
No, I was out before. And then, yes.
Did you say you were in the Dieppe Parade?
Yes.
Of 1942?
I then joined three commandos. Colonel John Marshall.
And can you take me through the Dieppe Parade in detail, well, far as you remember it?
We were protective. You know, Dieppe itself is a harbour like that, with
like
high cliffs all round. And there's a gap at the top. An impossible situation to put Churchill tanks on that beach. You could only get about two through the gap at the top at any one time. And the Canadians were doing it. But we were on the beach tops. We came in from Lepore, a bit further down, to do the protect the beach landing itself. We had heavy machine guns then. We did that, and then it only lasted 24 hours. Our next job was to try and burn a few Churchill tanks. We didn't want to leave. There were new Churchills then, at that time. The Canadians had taken them across. So we Molotov'd them, came back with the rescue boats. I'm talking too much.
Because I thought 3 Commando had a brush with the German Navy as you went in.
There was only 3 companies in this protective cover. It was the Canadians, 12,000 of them. 12,000 of them went in with the main force. I think we must have killed about 3,000 on the beach.
You were in the scout party, did you say?
Yes. We went as a protection. There was, on the top of those cliffs, we had to try and clear the weapons off the top to let them people go in. And I was just a fraction part of that from the north side. But there was 2 commando units there, 3 and 4.
What rank did you hold at the time?
Staff sergeant.